Okay, hi everybody, I'm Bron and I'm an alcoholic and I'm an addict. Okay, thanks for having me here. So my sobriety date is November the 3rd, 1988. So I have 26 years and I'm coming up to 27 years on November the 3rd this year. And I'll tell you a little bit about what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. And, you know, and I'm not going to really talk too much about what it was like, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like. It was hell. How else can you imagine, you know, starting to drink and drug when you're 13 years old? And I actually started the waterfront when I was that age, you know, so I started around 13, 14 years old. So I started a man's job when I was young. So I started the waterfront and I was like 14 years old and I quit school in grade 9 and I worked on this waterfront, and when I worked on it, it worked really well for me because there were ships filled with booze. Like I'd go to work and they're filled with booze and, you know, I'd go to work and I saw all these longshoremen, they had like these long jackets. And I'm wondering, why do they wear all these long jackets down to their ankles? And it's because they're stealing stuff. And I'm like, that's a brilliant idea. So that's what I did, right? So here I am, 13, 14, you know, working the waterfront, and I'm opening up containers. And here's containers filled with little bottles of booze. And it was perfect. So on my way out, as I was leaving, as I was staggering off of work, leaving work, my jacket would be filled with these little bottles, and it sounded like a Christmas tree, right? Everything would be jiggling, and it was booze. So, you know, for me, it was booze, and it was alcohol, and it was drugs. I mean, it was both. And I started really, really young. So that was my job. That was my job every day, is to be with the guys and to hang out with the guys and to drink, right? You know, so it went on for years. It went on for years. Of course, I quit school and I started work and I started driving machines at work and I was like flipping front end loaders into the water. You know, I was driving big heavy machineries and I would get into trouble and tires would blow out and the front end loader would tip into the water and, you know, it was horrible. I was driving big forklifts and I was running into like semi-trucks down on our docks and it was just a nightmare. And I thought everybody goes through this, but you know, so I ended up with a really bad reputation and believe me, I did at work. It wasn't right on Ron and today I'm known as right on Ron. Believe me, it wasn't right on Ron back then. It was hell. Every single day was hell. So all I can pretty much tell you about is I went to work and I was drunk and high every single day. And then I left there and I was still drunk and high. You know, and I didn't know anything. I really didn't know anything about drinking too much or doing too much. Or I didn't understand. I didn't understand. I wish somebody would explain all this, what I'm going to explain to you tonight. I wish somebody would have said, hey, look. You know what? Why don't we do this and I'm going to explain it to you and I'm going to make it really clear to you, like what's going on, like what's an alcoholic. You could have paid me all the money in the world and I didn't know what an alcoholic and addict was. You know what I would have told you? Is that somebody down on Main and Hastings that's just dying and they live outside of on the streets. That's all I knew what an alcoholic was. I didn't know it was us. I didn't know it was you. I didn't know it was me. I didn't know that. So life just kept on getting worse and worse and worse. And from by the time I was like 24 years old and wanting to quit at this point because drinking was just an everyday thing. I can remember one day, but many days were like this. I can remember one day at work and I work on the waterfront and there's lumber. And behind the loads of lumber, I was passed out. So here's where everybody can see, but I was around the corner and I was passed out. And I remember the foreman kicking my feet, saying like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, oh, geez, how did you know I was here? I was passed out. I go like, how do you know I was here? He says, well, get up and I'll show you. So I got up and I walked around, and right on the load of lumber was a bottle of vodka and was about 40 joints, right? So he says, I'm not going to fire you, but he said, look, come on, just get back to work. Because back then, all the guys used to do that. You know, it was just a guy's job back then, but it's not today. Thank God it's not today. But it was, you know, we drank and we did drugs, and that's just how it is. Here, I just have to just answer this. It's for my work. And that's just how it was, you know, and so he says, go back to work. And so I got rid of the joints and drank the vodka, and it was horrible. I mean, and every day was like this. So just imagine waking up, and I know you've all done this. Just imagine waking up every morning, imagining that this is hell. It's just another day of hell. And that was me. Just every single day, I needed help. And I didn't know where the help was because everybody I knew drank. So I asked my union for help, and I said, hey, I need some help. And this guy went out of his way, and he called me, and he said this to me on the phone. He said, can you quit tomorrow? And if you can quit tomorrow, I'm going to help you. I said, well, that's a stupid question. I said, of course I can quit until tomorrow. Of course I can, but I don't know about the next day or the next day. You know, I'm dying from this. He says, oh, don't worry about the next day and the next day. Can you just quit right now until tomorrow, and I will come and help you tomorrow? I said, for sure I can. And anybody can quit just for right now. Just one day, anybody can quit. And I've seen that, and I know that for a fact today. Anybody can quit just for one day. Anybody. I've seen people on you name it, but they can quit just for like one day. Even if they lock themselves up in a room all day, they can quit for one day. And I said, where is it going to get me? He says, don't worry, I'll get you help. So the next day, he came to pick me up. And he drove me to this place, and I didn't know where this place was. And he says, it's detox. And on the way going there, I said, like, do they have swimming pools? He said, no. He said, because I don't know anything about that. I says, is there, like, tennis courts? And he said, no. And I said, like, where are you taking me? He said, well, detox and stuff. So I went to detox. I hated it. I hated detox. I wanted to drink. I wanted to do drugs. I did not want to get stuck in some place where everybody is just out of their mind. Right? I didn't even know how crazy I was by the time I got to detox. But they explained it to me. I was really, really crazy. Well, that night, I was there all day, and that night, I phoned the guy, and I said, I'm leaving here. These people are crazy and stuff. And just before that, what happened was is people came back to detox. They went somewhere for an hour, and they came back, and they were all happy. And they're talking about, like, meetings or something, and I'm like, you guys are just too happy for me. I can't stand this. I'm right on Ron, right? But I wasn't when I got here. I was dying. I was dying. I didn't want to see the happy people. I didn't want to see the loud, positive people. I wanted people who thought the world was as bad as I saw it and as mean as I seen it. I didn't want to hang out. And so I phoned up this guy and I said, I'm ready to leave. He had special privileges to come to pick me up out of detox. And he did. He said, leave all your clothes there. I'm going to pick you up. And we went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was at the 8:30 meeting at the Vancouver Recovery Club. I sat at the back. And I could still remember the speakers, the first few people sharing. And you know what? It changed my life. You know, and I'm at the back of the room and I'm in tears. Because you know what I heard that night? I heard hope. And you know what? To give somebody hope is to give them the world. I didn't know nothing about hope. I knew about drinking, puking, fighting, and going through hell and living in fear every single day. I did not know that there was hope for people like us. I didn't know that you could quit. You can even quit just for one day and you can change your life. And that's what happened to me. I got here and I got so much hope out of that meeting. Is that I liked it so much, we stayed for the 11 o'clock meeting, 11 to midnight. I'm going back to detox about 12:30 in the morning, and I'm on fire, right? I love this, Right? Here was something that you guys, and you guys looked at me, and you guys showed me that, look, this is possible. You can achieve sobriety. You can get a day and another day and another day. You can go to meetings and get a sponsor and do the steps and live in a pretty amazing life. But I didn't know nothing about it. So that's how my journey started. And as I came here, my sponsor, the guy who took me, he ended up being my sponsor. And this guy didn't tell me what to do. He showed me. And if you show an alcoholic, you're giving them everything. So that's why I do what I do today. I was just telling a few girls, like, I got a website. And I have it on the internet. And I help people all over the world with this website now, with the 12 steps. So it makes it very crystal clear. And they're AA 12 steps from the big book. But I make it very crystal clear. And like, what are they talking about? Like, what is an alcoholic? And when can I start sponsoring people? And what should I do? Right? So I started this journey with this guy, and his name's Damon, was my very first sponsor. And he picked me up. We went to jails. We went to treatment centers. We went to hospitals. I was on the board of directors for the Vancouver Recovery Club for 10 years. Right after that, I belonged to Union Gospel Mission for another 10 years just to volunteer, right? So I've always been doing something with my sobriety to keep myself busy and helping others. But at the very beginning, I didn't know. I didn't know what to do. What are you doing every day? Like, now you're sober, right? I wanted to die drunk. Now I'm sober. And now I don't really want to die, but I'm going crazy. So what's going to happen to you is you're going to go crazy, right? You're going to be sober, clean and sober, but you're going to go crazy. And if you're not going crazy, you're doing the work. And the people who kind of do the work, they're not going crazy any longer. And I didn't realize that. So people told me, you know, get a sponsor, do the steps, and all of this stuff, right? So I'm just checking out the time. So that's what I did, is I got into the big book right away, right? I got into the 12 steps right away, and I did the 12 steps, you name it, 100 different ways. This treatment center way, that treatment center way, the big book, Idiot's Guide, NA, CA, AA, you name it, and I was doing them all, right? So then I started sponsoring people. I had 2 months over, and I'm like, I'm going to start sponsoring people. And I did. And like I was telling our friend here, is two things will push you faster into the 12 steps than anything else. So if you really want to get involved in the 12 steps and do them real quick, these two things will get you there. Start sponsoring somebody, because you always have to stay ahead of them, or fear. Right? You can just do it on your own. But, you know, and we need to walk with people. I always had somebody to walk with me. If you ever do this fellowship, you know, the fellowship is the meetings. If you ever do the fellowship, you need to do this with someone. You always need to be doing it with someone. You always need to be helping somebody or walking with somebody in your whole entire time here. If you're ever doing it by yourself, it's selfish, it's self-centered, and chances are it's not going to work out too well. Okay, we need to do this. So I walked with Damon, and I did it for years. And, you know, and I started sponsoring people. And I'll tell you, my success rate is 100%. And I'm going to tell you why it's 100%. Because I'm still here. Right? It worked. I'm still here. A lot of the sponsees didn't make it. But, you know, my heart goes out to them. I helped them as much as I could. But, you know, I can't control people. All I can do is I can love you, and I can walk with you. That's it. And show you a new way to live life. So I didn't know, and I'm all about the big book, and I'm all about the 12 steps. So that's what I should really talk to you guys about. Like, what do they mean, an alcoholic? What's an alcoholic? An alcoholic is somebody who cannot control it and stop entirely. So if you can't control alcohol or drugs, if you can't control it, if you cannot stop entirely, it means you're an alcoholic. It means you're an addict. It means that you're suffering from an illness which only a spiritual solution can fix. Okay? So am I that person? Yes, I am. I tried to control it a million times and I couldn't. Right? You know, and I know people who are heavy drinkers. That's not me. they can stop after maybe 6 or 7, right? That's my starting point. Give me 6 and 7 right away. You know, and I would order like 3 here and 3 here. Let's drink it. Let's do it. Somebody was saying to me even today, they said, oh, you've quit for 26 years, but if you go back out drinking, where are you going to be? Will you like just do it moderately? No. No, I'm going to get as much booze as I can, right? I might even break into Labatt's or one of those places and jump in there with a pile of cocaine and a whole big tank of booze, and I'm going to have the time of my life before I die, right? And me thinking that way is absolutely wrong, because that's the wrong way to think, right? And I didn't know what the problem was. I always thought it was the alcohol that was the problem, or the drugs, right? You could have bet me all the money in the world. Oh, yeah, it's the alcohol. Man, I should quit drinking. It's the alcohol. But it wasn't the problem. Right. Right? It wasn't the problem. The alcohol and drugs isn't the problem. And I always thought it was, but it's not. My mind got me to it. Here's the alcohol. Here's the drug. My mind says, yeah, it's okay. It's not okay. I don't care. I'm doing it. My thinking got me there. So you need to know is step one, it says we admitted we're powerless over alcohol. Powerless means lacking power, not listening to God. Okay? So, and they say, oh, we're powerless over people, places, and things. Truly, you're not, because the power is within us. And I'll explain that to you in a second. So powerless means lacking God, not listening to God, and that our lives became unmanageable. See, the symptoms for alcoholism and drug addiction, it's actually in a threefold part. The big book says it's two symptoms. It says the obsession of the mind, and the obsession of the mind happens before I have a drink or have a drug. My thinking, oh, you know what? I'm going to go drinking. This is all that's going to happen, right? And that happens, okay, that happens, and I can't stop that unless I have some spiritual connection. Because my mind is saying, hey, I'm going drinking, I'm leaving here and I'm going drink, I don't care. That's the obsession. Your counselor phones you and says, don't leave, I don't care, bye. That's the obsession, okay? And the allergy is once I have a drink, once I have a drink or a drug, I can't stop, I can't control it. So now I've drank in it or I've done it and I can't stop, I can't control it, I'm going to die. Truly, I'm going to die. But it all goes back to the very beginning. And the very beginning, it's not the obsession of the mind. You might think it is, but it's not. The very beginning of how this all works is 97% of people in life are in the spiritual malady. And the spiritual maladies is I'm irritable, restless, discontent. I'm spiritually not okay. And if I'm spiritually not okay, I'm okay, that's that part. If I'm not spiritually okay, I'm here. I'm actually starting to think about drinking and doing drugs. I'm actually thinking about it because I'm in so much spiritual pain inside. I can't stand it anymore. Can't stand this. I can't stand that. And I'm in so much spiritual pain, I'm now thinking about the obsession. And from the obsession, I go to the allergy. I'm actually going to drink. And then it goes right back to the very beginning, and it's the spiritual malady. And the spiritual malady, Dr. Silkworth talks about, the spiritual malady, he talks about it being irritable, restless, discontent. They actually talk about it on page 52, and it says, we are unhappy. So if you're in step one, you're in the problem, and the problem is my thinking. Because it tells me on page 25, it says the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. So the main problem is my thinking. But something happens before my thinking, it's the spiritual malady. But my main problem is my thinking. Okay? So if my thinking is the main problem, I'm in the problem. And 97%, it tells me the big book, that the stats now is up to like 3% of people are actually going to make this. 3%. Back years ago, it was 50, 60%. You do this work, you're going to stay sober. But now it's 3% because people are confusing this all. Right? That's what's happening. It's just kind of, I guess it's just getting watered down over the years. And we need to know that the problem is your thinking. It's not the alcohol and drugs. It's my thinking that gets me there. So if, and it tells me that I'm unhappy. So if any of you are unhappy right now, welcome to step one. That's not where I want to be. I want to be in step two and three, and I'll tell you why. Step two is it talks about why they wrote this book, is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself. That's why they wrote the book in step two. And they tell us exactly where God is. I'm not here to tell you who God is. I can't do that. Your God is your God. But I can tell you where God is from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's in our heart. It says, our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. I love that. Right? Our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. So I had the solution the whole time within me, but I also had the problem, and I had them backwards. I always thought this was the solution, and this was the problem. But it's the other way around. The solution has always been within you, and it's in your heart, and it's still the solution today. But you know what gets in the way of the solution? Thinking. Problem. Right? I start thinking. And you know, they talk about the insanity. The insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results, right? Wrong. You know what the insanity is? It says the idea. There's your thinking again. It's the idea that someday, somehow, we can control and enjoy this drinking is the great obsession to every abnormal drinker. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. Oh my God. So what's the insanity? The idea. Oh, I know. You know what? I know. I know. Right? Your head. Right? Your thinking will kill you. So I don't want to be in step one. I want to be in step two, the solution. Talks about it on page 55. It says, deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. So God's within us. And I always got it mixed up. And I didn't realize that God was in my heart. At the back of the big book, Spiritual Experience, it talks about our members have tapped an unexpected inner resource, which they presently use as a power greater than themselves. So God's within you. In step three, it talks about, as we felt this new power flow in, how can this power flow in? The only way that that power can flow in from my heart to your heart is if your mind's out of the way. Right? So we need to keep an open mind. And when we keep an open mind, now my heart can reach your heart. We need to keep an open mind. I need to be honest. And I need to be willing to let God run the show. And how do I do that? By listening to my heart. By praying. And that's the first three steps. And I usually help people through that in a half an hour. And now what happens is it talks about a psychic change. It talks about now you can start dealing with things a little differently. By the time you do the first three steps, you should have a psychic change. You should be able to see things a little different. And you know how I see things? I see things from my heart now because I've just done the first three steps. Do you know what? I didn't know that. I'm going to listen to my heart. So here's a good question for you, because here's the first three steps. Would you drink tonight if you're spiritually okay? I'm going to ask you, would you drink tonight if you're spiritually okay? Yes or no?
No.
Absolutely not. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about being spiritually okay, not living in that spiritual malady, living in our hearts, changing our whole outlook on life by living in our hearts and by prayer. Spiritually, should I be drinking and doing drugs today? Absolutely not. You need to listen to your heart, not your head. Your head will send you out. Right? And I know how you all got here. I know how you all got here to this house. I know how you all got sober. Do you want me to tell you? Your hearts were louder than your thinking. Because if it wasn't that way, you wouldn't be here. Because you know what you would be doing? I know what I'd be doing. I know what I would be doing. I would not be here. Right? I'd be giving it to, like, you know, Labatt's. Once again, I'd be breaking open, you know, where I used to live, right across, Molson Canadians. I used to live right across the street, sober, right? For years down near Burrard Street. And, you know, and all I could imagine, one day, if it ever happens, I'm going to break in, I'm going to go to the top, and I'm going to jump in. Right? You might as well go all out. And never have I wanted to do that. Why haven't I ever wanted to do that? Why haven't I wanted to go back? Right. It's because I want to be spiritually okay today. That's so important. So that's just the first three steps. So why do we do the rest of the steps? It's to keep you in your heart. It's to keep you in this house. And to keep you in your heart every single day. Living in your heart every day. That's why we do the rest of the steps. So then we do step four. And step four, I break it into four parts. The resentment, the fears, the sex, the harms. And I'm just going to go through it just real quick with you. I get a resentment, and I'm going to give you a resentment that I had, and I'm just giving you an example. I don't like this one person, and I'll tell you who it is, right on Ron. I don't like this guy. If I was sober, I don't like this guy. He's too loud. He's just like too loud. He's interfering with my space. He's too loud, and he's too positive. Don't like him. Don't love him. No. So I have a resentment towards him, and this is what I use in this guide, this small guide that I have. And so why don't you like him? Because he's loud. Whatever. And how does that affect you? Oh, it affects my personal relationship with him. Okay, so now that's in the big book. It says that's as far as most of us ever got. But we didn't go far enough. And we need to go further. And what we do then is it says on another page, it said, we resolutely look for our own mistakes where we've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And it says we have to look at our mistakes. So is being frightened a mistake? And I talk to people about that. Is frightened a mistake? And the big book says, yes, it is. We resolutely look for our own mistakes. That's what it says. I'm not making this stuff up. Where we resolutely look for our own mistakes, where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? And yeah, God doesn't want you frightened. And I didn't know that. Right? So let me ask you the same question. Is it a mistake to be dishonest? Well, hell yeah. You can answer that right away. And that's still one of the four they're talking about. So we pick one of the four. So what is it with right on Ron? Well, and now I have to resolutely look for my mistake. My mistake is I'm just being selfish. That's it. But say a kid stealing from 7-Eleven, for instance. He's stealing from 7-Eleven and he's trying to make amends, or he's trying to work these steps, and he's stealing, he's a thief. We know he's dishonest. That's his mistake. I want to know why. And your why is my faults. So what are my faults? My faults are my defects of character. I don't care if you stole from 7-Eleven. I want to know why. Oh, okay, Ron. Why is because I was inconsiderate. Because I was only thinking of myself. I was inconsiderate. I was mean. I judged the people there. So I pick up my defects of character. And this is where I get my defects of character from. So what's my defects of character because of this Ron that I didn't like? He's loud and everything. Now I need to close that part on it and now look at my faults. My faults are, I know I'm selfish, but why am I selfish? Maybe I'm jealous. Maybe I'm just being inconsiderate. Maybe I'm just judging him. And all of these things block you from God, right? And why are we doing step four? It's to remove the blocks that are blocking you from God. So we're removing the blocks that are blocking you from your heart, right? So say somebody cuts you off. We don't want you swearing at them, right? Somebody cuts you off and you're driving and first thing you go is, I have this. No. We don't want you doing that. We want you to just say, okay, come on in. Have a great day. Right? We don't want you to react the way we've been reacting. And I've always been reacting the wrong way. I've been reacting from my defects. I've been reacting angry. I'm inconsiderate. You know, right? And these defects are big blocks. And plus, they will help us out with step six. So then we have fears. And we have fears, and it talks about we have fears that we have no connection. We have no resentment in connection with them. So we have fears that block us that have no resentment. Like, I'm going to give you a couple of examples. One is money. Everybody has fear of money. I do the steps with everyone. Like, believe me, I do it with young people, old people, women, guys. It doesn't matter. I don't care how young you are. I don't care how old you are. I do the steps with anybody who wants to do it. So we have fears, and I have fear of money. And it goes we need to know what the solution is. So we have fear, we go, why? And there's some sort of solution. And what the solution is I needed to get to a solution to these fears. And the solution clearly is on the bottom of page, right in the middle of page 68. And it says, we direct our attention to what God would have us be with that fear. So I don't care what the fear is. Let's say it's money. So, oh God, what would you have me do with this money? You know what God just told me? Work. But that's not all I have to do. It's always some sort of action I need to do to remove a fear. So work is an action, but it still didn't solve my money problems. I need to save money, and I needed not to spend it. So if I do these actions, am I going to have that fear anymore? No. That's why we do the work. And you cannot remove fear without some sort of action. You would say, and if I ask anybody in the fellowship, they're going to say, oh, I just pray. But praying clearly doesn't, because I'm going to give you an example. And it's just an example. I'm afraid to swim. I'm going to pray as much as I want. I'm going to jump in the water, and guess what? I'm going to drown, exactly. I need a solution. So I'm going to yell to God, God, what would you have me be? And that's the solution. Direct our attention to what he would have us be. Do you know what God just told me? Swimming lessons. And if I do swimming lessons, am I going to be afraid of water? No. Intimacy. Intimacy is huge for everybody. So I'm just going to give you a little clue with intimacy. And I'm not talking about the sexual act. I'm just talking about being close, anything. And I hear from everybody. Everybody I've ever done a step five with has brought up intimacy, that their fear and stuff. And I'm going to tell you what it is. Is one is communication. It's a two-part again. It's communication. But that's not all you need, is to get intimate with friends or whoever, or somebody somebody you want to sleep with or whoever. Okay? You need communication, but you need communication, and you need what's the other thing? Is being comfortable. And you know what? Sometimes the other person isn't comfortable. That's where the communication comes in. And the more communication you have, the more comfortable you are. And you know what? You can have an amazing relationship with anybody with communication, right? And being comfortable. You need to be comfortable. So that solves the fear, right? So then we have sex. And the point is with sex is we just answer the questions. But what I have found with the sex part is when we go through all the questions, I just go A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And, you know, where was I selfish and all of this other stuff. And none of it really has to do with the sexual part of it. Right? So how do we grow from this? Is there's kind of like a routine, not a routine, but a pattern. And one of these questions is, what should have I done instead? That's the most important part I want to know, is what should have you done instead? I go through and I listen to all of this, but what should have you done instead? And I know there's been sex abuse or giving it or getting it and I've talked to many counselors and everything else, but it's healing by talking about it. And there is healing. And to look at this piece of paper and say, look, I wasn't selfish. No, I wasn't at fault. No, I wasn't. I wasn't at fault. I wasn't inconsiderate. No, 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 no. But what should have I done instead? You didn't tell anybody. You've been holding on to it for all these years, and you needed to tell somebody. And all I needed to do was tell somebody, and maybe somebody didn't listen, but I needed to tell somebody who would listen. Maybe I tried telling my parents, they didn't listen. Maybe I tried telling the police or whoever, but they didn't listen. We need to keep telling somebody until somebody listens. And that's the healing part you're going to get when it comes to that. Right? And then it says, a sane, sound ideal of his future sex life. With this person, nothing. And do you know why they ask that question? Is a lot of times I get in relationships and I break up in a relationship, but I go back to the relationship. So they ask you, what's a sane and sound ideal of a future sex life with my old girlfriend? Well, I'm going to put no contact. Right? But most of us go back. But I need to see the truth. This is why we're doing this work. I need to see the truth. This is why we do the work. And then there's the harms. Here's the last list. And the harms is our last list. And let me give you an example of how the harms work as we bring over all the resentments to this last list. And take my, so I want, let's see. If I steal your cell phone, would you get resentful? If I stole your cell phone, would you? Of course you would. Wouldn't you get resentful if I stole your cell phone?
Oh,
of course you would. Okay, now steal my cell phone. Okay, now are you going to get resentful because you stole my cell phone?
No.
No, of course not. But you hurt me. And this is the harm. And you know, some stuff I just really just need to fix. Right? And I don't know how you're going to fix it. That comes to step 9, and I'm going to talk about that. But how am I going to fix it? And I did a lot of stuff. Don't kid yourself, you guys. I was 24 when I got here, and believe me, I'm still paying. Do you get me? And I'm still willing to do whatever I can to fix the harms that I've ever done to anybody at any time, anywhere. If that's money or whatever, and maybe I can't pay back $1 million, but I could sure try in giving it to the seventh tradition. Or maybe I could buy the newcomer a cup of coffee. Or maybe I could just, right? There is ways to fix this. And that's what that's there for. So then we get to step 6 and 7. And step 6 is we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Well, we know what they are, remember? We did them in step 4. It's like, oh, I'm so inconsiderate. I'm jealous. I'm judging. And how can I help you change if you don't know the core part? I don't care, like, what you were doing with your dad, or he didn't lend me money, so I'm not going to talk to him anymore. I don't care about that stuff. I want to know what caused all that, and it's my defect. It's how I react every time I see my dad. It's like, oh, you know what? He still doesn't give me money. I'm still pissed off. Right? So that's inconsiderate. Mm-hmm. Right? Now we can change something. So we bring over all our defects of character in step 6. And it says we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. What are they? They're right there. And I say, name about the top 10 defects. What are they? I'm mean. I'm angry. I judge people. I'm inconsiderate. Ugh. Okay, that's step 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. You're thinking about it or you know about it. And that's just how life is. Step 7 is, I'm acting out on it, and I don't want to do this anymore. Do you know what? I don't want to be mean anymore. I don't want somebody to cut me off and be mean anymore. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be mean anymore. I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be inconsiderate. So what's the other end of it is God's will. Because you bring in self-will and your ego and just do the opposite. And that's step 7. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. So now it's like, God, you know what? Help me not do that anymore. And I want to know what actions are you going to take so you don't live in these defects anymore. I want to know how are you going to live being considerate today. What actions are you going to do? I'm going to be kind and loving. I'm so angry. If you have an anger problem, you need to do one thing. The opposite. You need to react with love. And I didn't know that. And I was always saying, even my sponsor says, why are you angry? I'm like, because. And he said, you know, you're angry just for one reason and one reason only. And I'm like, really? And he told me why you're angry. And you get angry for one reason, one reason only. You're not getting your own way. And I didn't know that. So you know what he told me for the next 12 years? Ron, it's okay. You're not getting your own way. Right? And it's like, oh, okay. You know, and it just became funny. Ron, you're getting angry. You know, you're just trying to get your own way again. Right? Yeah. And you know what? I didn't want to really hear about the defects any longer. I wanted to go straight to step 7. I wanted to hear about the love in my life. And I wanted to react with love in everything I did. I wanted to, like, live in my heart. I wanted to be considerate and judge people. Judge everybody. I judge everybody. I don't care if you're short, tall, fat, skinny, Chinese. I don't care. Gay, not gay. I judge everybody. And I did. And I was just nuts. Right? And then I did this work and I'm like, judge. Uh-oh. So what's the opposite of that is non-judging. But how do you do that? I'm going to tell you exactly how you do that. How about judge everybody with love today? And that's what I had to do. I need to judge everybody with love. I don't have to pick away anybody any longer, anytime. I need to judge people with love today.
And that's what I do. So I don't see things the same way as I used to. I used to see things from what I think. I used to see things from what I know. But it hurt me. Now I see things from my heart today. And I know what the truth is that we're all in this together. Right? So now I'm living step seven. Humbly ask him to remove my shortcomings. Now I can live in this world of love and this world of being considerate, of this world of being kind, and this world of just being caring and showing others that I care. So that brings us to step 8 and 9. And our step 8 is done in our step 4. And our step 9, it came to step 9, and really, you know, I'm living in this world of love, and I have love for everyone, and I don't have to like what some people say and do, but I have to love them, but I'm grinding my teeth, and I have to make amends, and I need to see life a whole new way. And, you know, I had to go to people that I really didn't really care about. I didn't, the truth is, and I still do today. I really, you know, but I have to love them all, right? That's what the big book says. So I found it really hard to go to people and stuff like this. And then after doing so many step fives, I came to a conclusion after reading the work and stuff. The most important person is me. And I didn't know that. So I needed to make amends to me first. And what is amends to me? Like, what are you talking about? Amends to you is the most important part of this. And it truly is the biggest piece in your life is making amends to you. And what does that look like? How about reacting with love? How about bringing over all the step 7 stuff? Just the actions. Like being considerate, being kind. How about bringing that into my step 9 so I get to see that every day? How about bringing step 2 and 3 into my life? Just living the solution to everything. I don't care what it is, go right to the solution instead of the problem. So I bring that. So what does my life look like today? My life, my amends is really loving and it's kind and it has to. And when you can make amends to you and love you, you can go to anybody. It doesn't matter if he's loud. It doesn't matter if they're inconsiderate or mean. It doesn't matter about them anymore. It's how I react to everybody today. And how do I react? See, you have to realize is once you've done this work, should I ever have a resentment towards anybody? Yes or no? And the answer is no. And I'm going to tell you why. It's because I blamed everybody my whole entire life. I blamed everybody for everything. And it had nothing to do with them. I don't care what they did to you. It's how I reacted. And I reacted wrong. Sure, I might have should have phoned the police. Maybe I should have went to the police, but I didn't. Maybe I did, but I didn't get help. Maybe I should have went to somebody else who was willing to help me. It's how I react today to everything. And a resentment has nothing to do with them. Because remember when we did the step 4? To conclude to others we're wrong as far as most of us ever got. And it didn't go far enough. So that means has nothing to do with them. So if you've got a resentment towards anybody, it has nothing to do with them. How are you reacting? Oh, you know how I'm reacting from my defects of character. You're wrong. You're living in step 6. Live in step 7. So now I'm living in step 9. And I'm living in love. I'm reacting with love in everything I do. I'm living in my heart. I'm living in prayer. I'm living in kindness. I'm living in caring and showing that to others by my kind, loving actions. I'm helping others. I'm helping people through this work. That's my step 9. You know, I need to be kind and loving to everybody. That's step 9. That's a step 9 for you. And I didn't realize that. And then when you do a step 9 and just, hey, all you need to do is see it every day. I should be going to 3 meetings a week. I don't know what you should be doing. I'm just taking a guess here. Let's just ask God. Yep, 3 meetings a week at least. Right? Get a sponsor. Yep. Right? Do the steps. Yep. Should I be sponsoring people? Absolutely. Do kind of what God's telling you to do. And that brings us to step 10. And so once you can make amends to you, you can make amends to others. So then it brings us to step 10. And step 10 says, continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. We're doing this through the whole day. God, like, help me. Like, oh, you know, right? Help me get back in my heart. Something happens, okay. And I, you know, I didn't realize this, but you know how you can settle every argument in life is by one word. Did you know that? One word. And say you want to argue with somebody. If you say this one word, I can't argue with you any longer. Try it. And it's okay. Okay. But I want you doing this and this is this. Yeah, okay. I'm like, okay. And you know, somebody's cutting me off. And I'm like, oh, a little ticked off. I'm like, oh, okay. And what you're doing is you're just giving it up. And you know what? You're not saying yes or no, but you're stopping it dead in its track. So if you ever argue with somebody, the next time, try it. And just say, okay. And you can't argue with somebody who says, okay, you should be doing this. You should be doing it. Yeah, okay. Doesn't mean you're going to do it. Right? And maybe you will, maybe you won't. But you being okay is more important than more than you'll ever know is you being spiritually okay. Here we go again. Spiritually okay. Because I know what it's like when you're not okay. And when you're not okay, look out. Right? Because you could go back out drinking. You could go back out and use. So do I need to be spiritually okay? Do I need to be saying okay through? Absolutely. That has a lot to do with step 10. It doesn't say it in the book, but it says it in the work. Is that I need to be spiritually okay all the time. Step 10 helps us go through this. And then it talks about we have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And now we're getting into step 11 stuff, right? You know, that's step 10. But let's get into step 11 now. And, you know, step 11, it talks about, it says, on the awakening and when I retire at night. So when I retire at night, there's 9 questions I have to answer. It actually puts all the steps into kind of like one in step 11. So what's really important to do is when I retire at night, answer those questions. Were we selfish? Was I thinking about myself all through the day? Did I help anyone? It just asks you a whole bunch of questions. Answer them from 86 to 88. And then it says on the awakening, let's look at the next 24 hours ahead. And now by this time it says God gave you a brain. We want you to use it. And that's because by the time you get to step 11, you're thinking about others. You're not thinking about you. Right? And we shouldn't be ever thinking about you. If you're ever thinking about you, you're thinking about the wrong person. You should always be thinking about others. Don't think about you. No thinking. Go with the heart. Right? So, you know, and step 12 is having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We just live life from our hearts today. You know, after you do this work, you want to help others. And there's only one way we can pretty much help others today is by taking them through these 12 steps. If you want to help change people's lives, do you know what? I've went and, you know, I pick people up and I take them to meetings and I've gone through the big book and I've read it and I've done hundreds of things over the years. But nothing has worked more for me than helping people through this work. And it changes everything. It truly just changes everything when we do this work. And step 12 is helping others. And we help others through this work. You know, we go to the meetings. We be of service. We pick up the chairs. We be of service today. And when you're being of service, you're not about you any longer. Right? And that's where I had to be. I needed to jump right in the middle of this because my life depended on it. I didn't know about the help. I didn't know about the hope. But today I do. And I know that none of you guys have to live this way. You don't have to live this way. It only takes like 20 hours. Or do what they're telling you to do. Right? Or go to my website. And then you too can have friends all over the world. I have a sponsee. Her name's Christine from Ottawa. I talk to every day. And I have 3 sponsees in Ottawa. I have 2 guys in New York. Great guys. You know, like, I'm so blessed. I got a guy in Florida. You know, Andre in Florida. You know, I have Toronto. I have a couple of sponsees in Toronto who just love me and I love them. Right? You know, in Calgary. So I'm just, in Russia. I helped this guy in Russia, and I helped him through the steps, and I'm always talking about react with love, react with love. He says, Ron, in Russian, he says, I set Russia on fire with love. Right?
Yeah.
And that's what I want you to do. I want you to be excited about your life. And the only way you're going to be excited about your life is if you listen to your heart, if you live in your heart. So what is this all about? It's about living in your heart. It's about getting closer to God. And where's God? In your heart. Right? And if you can live in your heart, will you be drinking? Absolutely not. But why do we drink? It's because we go back to our heads. Our heads tell us a bunch of lies. And you need to know the difference between the truth and the false. And the truth is very, very clear now. It's my head. My thinking will kill me. That's the insanity. The idea. Just to go over it once again. Let me give you an example before I quit, because we're getting close to near the end here. Is I'm going to give you an analogy about the solution and the problem. And my TV breaks. I have a nice TV just like that one, and it breaks. Okay, what's the very first thing that happens? Is I'm like, oh no, I'm like irritable, restless, discontent. I'm in my head. My TV broke. I'm a guy. Oh, my TV broke, and I'm like, oh, I'm irritable, restless, discontent. Oh no, and I check my wallet. I got enough money. Okay, I take it to a TV repair place. Okay, so I go and I take it to the TV repair place, right? They fix it. I get it back and it works. I'm like super happy. I'm in the solution. I'm super happy. 2 months down the road, my TV breaks. What's the very first thing that happens when it breaks again? What's going to happen? What's that? I'm going to blame. Anyways, most people say it's your irritable, restless, discontent.
It's still not the TV.
But I'm not. I'm not irritable, restless, discontent. I'm in the solution, and I'm going to take it back to the guy and tell him to get it fixed.
Yeah.
So the meaning of the story is I'm always living in the solution. I don't care what problem you have going in your mind right now. If you miss your family, why am I here? Where am I going? I don't care. It's all in your mind. I want you in your hearts, and I want you to tell yourself the truth and to live in the truth from today on and live in your hearts. And what's the truth? I should be here. I am well looked after here. You know what? This is a beautiful house, a beautiful home. You know, you're all well looked after. You know, and you're saving your life. Let's get to the reality of this. You each and every one of you are saving your life. And you're worth it. And I'm worth it. So continue to live in your heart. Continue to go to meetings, continue to help others, and don't think about you, right? And live in the solution, right? And live in the step sevens, live in the kindness and you know, being considerate and judging with love today, right? Live in your heart. Okay, thanks for my sobriety.